Hello, dear friends, and welcome to our podcast dedicated to sight reading through the lens of the historically informed performance practice. And Merry Christmas to everybody. Especially today, I'm pleased to have the whole beautiful ensemble in front of me. Could you guys introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Cornelia Demmer from the Casulana Lute Consort, and I'm playing the tenor lute.
Hello, this is Talitha Kumi Whitmer from the Casulana Lute Consort, and I play the bass lute.
Hi, I'm Alice Lutor, and I play the soprano lute.
And hello, I'm Emelisa Roux, and I play the alto lute in said consort.
Ah, and you also sing.
Oh, I do sing. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Yes. And what is the Casulana Consort?
The Casulana Lute Consort was founded with the idea to finally put some focus on the ensemble music we have for lute consort. We chose the name Maddalena Casulana because she was a female composer from the 16th century, and she was the first female composer whose works were published, like printed. And she also writes in her foreword for the print that she wants this print to be published to show that actually women can also compose as well as men. So since we are four women, we thought that is a nice link. And she was also a lutenist.
Mm-hmm. Do you know something about her life? What did she do apart from lute playing?
Well, she was composing, so her compositions are not for lute, so we have no lute tablature surviving from her. But she wrote two madrigals madrigal books published by her, one for four voices, one for five voices. And she was apparently quite famous. So there was this quite famous wedding at the court of Munich, and where also Orlando di Lasso was working. And there they would play one of her compositions, for example, and her works would also appear in other collections, contemporary collections with like madrigals by famous composers. And she was amongst others, like very big names.
Yeah. And how did you come to the idea to form a lute consort? It's a very special setup of instruments.
Yeah, so we have surviving music for four lutes, and especially for these lutes with these tunings, so bass lute in D, for instance, tenor lute in G, then alto lute in A, and soprano lute in D. And then we have various other tunings for three lutes, or also four lutes. And the most famous, I would say, is Nicolas Vallée. Le Secret des Muses, he has music for four lutes. Let's say among the lute world, those are the pieces that are the most played with four lute players. So we're not the first ones to do that. There are several groups who have done that. I don't think it ever sticks, like people gather, play this music, and then go their own way. And our idea is really to explore that repertoire and find other pieces that were composed for four lutes, or create our own. So that's taking vocal music for four voices, usually that's better, or dances, and arranging them for four lutes.
And how is it notated in this book of Vallée?
In this case, we have a tablature for each lute in the right tuning, and there are two lutes on one folio and opposite to each other. So you could, if you put it flat on a table, you could read facing each other.
Very cool. And how did you guys meet, and how did you decide to form this consort? Yeah, maybe there is a background story.
So initially it was my idea, because I was dreaming of focusing more on ensemble music with lute instruments since since a couple of years already. And then there was that circumstance that all the four of us were studying at the same time with the same teacher at the same school. And it was like, whoa, we are like four girls studying, because that's a very rare thing in the lute world, because the lute world is mostly male dominated. And so that was a special situation none of us has ever experienced before. And so, and we understood each other. So we were quite...
Yeah, we had a special click, I think, as an ensemble. And we all had similar experiences. Emma, you also didn't have many boys previously. I didn't either in another school. And we come here and then we're like, wow.
Yeah, I'd like to add, for me, it's funny because, so I arrived in 2015 and I stayed, even there was another woman in the other class, but we didn't have so much contact. And then she left. And then I felt very lonely. And then these beautiful people arrived. And it was really cool, to have suddenly just so many women. I felt very lonely for a long time, even though, of course, the men were very nice people. That's not an issue. It's nice to when it's a bit more balanced.
Yeah, especially putting this... the group that you have putting together with the name of Magdalena Casolana, I think it's quite significant. Have you thought about this background of diversity and inclusivity, and how did you maybe approach this subject, and how do you approach this subject in your field, in what you do, in your work?
Well, in the beginning, actually, it wasn't like we really wanted to intentionally create a female ensemble, but it was like four of us who were having this same wish for just diving deeper into lute music just turned out to be at the same place, and we had a good click. We were already good friends, and we were all dreaming about having a lute consort, so it happened. And then the time we were speaking already about so many other sociological topics like women in the field of art, music, etc. So we had lots of connection already, and that led to forming this friendship, this, same understanding and philosophy kind of led to leading and creating an ensemble. And then we were all women. But that was kind of out of a chance,
True. Yeah. So it's not in the first place a feminist ensemble or something like this, like saying...
Or a statement.
Yeah, exactly. So, but the funny thing is, just because you're doing that, people perceive you. Mm-hmm. They put you in the box of, oh, like we had like super funny questions like, but, you know, would you actually play together with men as well? And it's like, what? that's not the question. That's not the point. We're just doing it. And of course, the name has a certain significance because it's just obvious. And when we are on stage and we are four ladies on stage, it is a statement and people perceive it like that. And we cannot deny it as well. But it's not like we don't place it like in the front of everything.
Thank you.
Yes, so you also participated in the Lute Symposium in Basel. What kind of repertory did you play there, and did you read a paper, or it was just a concert, or did you do some kind of a presentation?
So it was a lecture concert, and I prepared a presentation. It was just a very general overview over what kind of different repertoire there is, because there are the already mentioned by Emma-Lise de Vallée pieces. These are like arrangements of dances, or there is one arrangement of air de cour, SMRs, which appears to be quite known at that time, around 1600. And he wrote an arrangement for the four lutes, and we had the idea, oh, we can actually go back to the air de cour and make our own arrangement out of the arrangement. So we placed the air de cour as it is written. So with one lute accompanying the voice, Emma-Lise was singing, and then we would come with the lute quartet version, and then we would combine those versions, so to say. So we were playing the lute quartet version, and Emma-Lise was singing on top of that the air de cour, which works super nice. And people actually liked it a lot when we play the lutes, and then all of a sudden there is singing on top of that. That's always a very good effect. So we have arrangements for dances, and then we have arrangements already for, but these are for three lutes, of vocal music, of madrigals by Orlando Di Lasso, for example.
Do we have some kind of an evidence that it was a common practice at that time that people were playing lutes all together?
We have evidence first of Nicolas, I'm not sure, Vallée himself. He founded an ensemble of four musicians with, really, we still have the contract. So they would sign the contract saying if one of them is ill, he still gets paid by the others, and they would save a part of their fee for the one who is ill. The one who got the gig, so to say, would get a little bit more than the others. So it's a very democratic thing. And he had a dance school, and these musicians from his group were supposed to play in the dance school. We don't know if they played all the time, like with four lutes, maybe with violin, bass, and one lute or something like this, a combination, because we have evidence that Vallée was not only playing the lute, but also violin and bass. So the other thing we have is from the French court around 1600 as well. There are some beautiful pictures where we see dancing situations, so to say, like people dancing a pavane, for example. And then on the it's in the time of Henry III. And then we have at the side four lutenists standing, obviously playing the music for the dancers. So we have these paintings. They're in the Louvre in Paris, and we don't know the who painted them. And we have reports of the Ballet de la Reine of Maria de' Medici when she was at the court in Paris, that in these Ballet de la Reine, there were not only groups of violins playing and singers, but also a group of 13 lutes playing at the same time, really coming into the hall as a group. Yes, so we are only four, but...
Cool. But actually it reminds me of this, like, 50 violins of the king or whatever, exactly. Like groups like that. Exactly. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, and how does the voice distribution work in such a group? For instance, if you play a four-voice madrigal, who plays what? Is it only one voice or you combine?
So if you look, what we did before doing our arrangements was to look at what was available, of course. And if you look at Vallée, for instance, he will have, every lute will have the bass. It yeah, and one voice, and then it's kind of filled with, you know, the chords are filled with one or two more notes. And depending on the instrument as well, it's always meant to fit well within in the hand. So it's maybe the bass lute will have a bit less. The chords won't be as full. The soprano lute will have a lot more diminution. The alto lute will have less diminution than the soprano lute. But yeah, it's a bit more energetic. And then the tenor lute will have just block chords, just a bit more complicated. And so yeah, when it's very clear, it's very easy to imitate in a way. But the one thing that's particular to Valet is that it's filled with parallel octaves everywhere, which is fine when you think of just an extra, like, I don't know, 8 foot, 4 foot, and etc. So it's fine. But to our modern ear, I think sometimes trained in the early music world, it's a bit weird. And then what else? Are there some mistakes in the...
In Valet, not so many, but Pacoloni.
Pacoloni, yeah. Yes. My God, filled with mistakes. It's for three lutes.
Yeah, it's interesting because it feels like there were more... Pacoloni is even earlier, so it's in the middle of 16th century, so around 50 years earlier, let's say. And it feels like they were thinking not too much, like, I'm still thinking about how he would compose these things, but it's more like when you play each part on its own, it's fine. But if you put them together, they are clashing in many places because of maybe some chromaticisms which do not work. If you go up, you have a sharp. If you go down, you have no sharp. And the other lute is doing the opposite at the same time or something like this, and it's really, or changing the harmony one beat before or after. So really, and up to a certain point we found out, okay, that's like the color of these pieces, and the Pacoloni pieces are really like dance music. There's nothing sophisticated in it. You have a bass lute which plays the harmonies, so to say. And then you have on top two other lutes who are playing diminutions, like challenging each other, so to say. So there is nothing super subtle in this music. So we thought until a certain point, this kind of colors fit very well. But I mean, if the harmony changes are not at the same time, it doesn't work. So you need really a lot of editing work for that.
Okay, and I wanted to talk about the piece that we have chosen for today. And this is a piece by Magdalena Casulana. And Cornelia, you did the arrangement of this piece for four lutes. And I saw, guys, you played from the tablature. So you had to prepare your own tablature for... Does it also work, as you said, Emma, that you play your main voice and somewhat of the other notes of the harmony? Yeah?
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah, I think what Cornelia did was a bit more refined. So sometimes we're not, for example, I'm not always playing the alto line as my top voice. There's a bit more, you know, to have nice voice leading. I think Cornelia would speak about it a bit better than me. but I realize now that we've never just taken a piece and played, okay, I need to play the bass line, I need to play my voice. We have never done this kind of like basso seguente plus like focusing on one voice.
It was kind of close when we did the first Casulana piece, which Alice was the initiator in the editing process. But first we had more or less... one line per person, and then we each added things, was it?
Yes, we each added some chords and diminutions, but first I think we were really starting from playing one voice.
You're right, and then, but it was intense because we worked the four of us in a room for hours, just, you know, and here you can do this, oh, but maybe don't do this at the same time as me, because then it clashes, and so... Yeah, that was way more refined than what would happen, I guess, if you're just like doing like Pacoloni and I mean whatever happened at the time, but yeah, so that was very refined and very researched, and we really wanted a result.
Yes, so today's piece, what is it about? How is it called? Can somebody read the text, please?
None of us is Italian here.
at least to understand what it is about.
Yeah, very sorry to our Italian listeners. Ridon o per le piagge. Oh, I have a good answer for this. So since we were sight reading this piece, the next step would be translating the text, getting to know a bit more.
Actually, I can just put the link to the translation if there is one, and I can find it.
It's actually Petrarca, like 12th century beautiful poem.
Yeah, the sonnets of Petrarca. Yeah, so then it's easy and everybody can understand what it is about. And so I joined, and it was great, actually. It was very nice to join such a nice group. And I played the top voice, and how did you guys feel about this piece? And was it especially difficult or not especially difficult?
So I chose that piece because it, if you want to arrange something for lute quartet, you have to find a piece which fits to the nature of lute instruments. For example, if you have very, very long notes where one voice would start with a note and then until a certain point, and then there comes another voice in. So you really need this sustain. And that works perfectly fine for singing and for Viola da Gamba consort, for example. But for lutes, no. Then you have to find different solutions how to sustain the sound, actually. So you could add diminutions, that would be a very lutenistic way, or you play the chord again in different inversions or whatever. But it's much easier if you take a piece which has shorter note values. And also, this piece is quite homophonic in a couple of places, which makes it a bit easier for a first approach where it should work quite fast, that it comes together.
But also I noticed that when we played the same voice with Alice, and there was also a couple of places where I noticed that there were more notes actually than I played in my part.
And also, there are some parts where two voices would start with like a third parallel movement, and that's a very lovely moment when you have two lutes doing the same movement together, and then the next two lutes would imitate that. So that's a very, very lutenistic thing. So a very like dialogue form, and so that fits very well to lute concert.
Yeah, that's for sure. There was also it's great to work on this piece, the four of us, or any piece, the four of us, and see that if you add a traverso of one voice and you double, or it works immediately. And it's really, for me, it's really kind of a jump in the past, because we know so much that these instruments were playing together, and whatever, even if a flute is an octave higher, or it just doesn't matter, and it immediately mixes really well. You don't really have to change anything. And I really appreciate that in Renaissance music, that you can just mix different instruments together, and it doesn't have to have a specific role. As long as it's in its range and it's comfortable, then it just works.
It works,
It was very nice to make music with you.
Yes. Yes, so now we will try a Christmas song. But otherwise, thank you very much for joining me for this Christmas episode. And Merry Christmas to everybody. Bye.
Merry Christmas.